Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's 9 o'clock on a Friday night here in the UK. Matt is in Malaga, where it is 10 p.m. on a Friday night. Hello, Matt.
Hello. We officially had an early finish today. I think we can call today an early finish. So here I am.
Yeah, this is a delightfully early recording. And yet, I would like to introduce you folks to Two and a Bit Beers Law, joining us from Solihull. Hello, David.
Hello.
He has, quote, watched 20 minutes of tennis today, but he's had two and a bit beers and he's here and we could not be more thrilled.
Yeah, I'm well into the third. And I'm very much enjoying it. Yes, I've kept an eye on the tennis as the day has gone on via the wonders of mobile phone technology. And whilst my hands were freezing on the side of the football pitch while my son was playing, I did have Emil Ruusuvuori trying his damnedest on it for a small amount of time. But yes, I may be somewhat leaning on Mount Roberts like I've been doing every single day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear to everyone listening who's doing the heavy lifting in terms of takes this Davis Cup week. David and I we're mere accoutrement this week. Thank goodness for you, Matt, in Malaga, where the Finland fun is over. RIP, the Finland fun. It was good while it lasted, but the aforementioned damnedest of Emil Ruusuvuori just wasn't enough, Matt. Australia are into the Davis Cup finals final.
They are. And actually, when I got to site this afternoon, they were practicing, the Australian team, on the court. And it was obviously happening at the same time that they were testing out the graphics on the centre court. So while they were practicing, there was a graphic going round pre-tie saying Australia advances to the Davis Cup finals. And I thought, oh, that's a bit harsh on Finland. And then it also made me think of the first time that Bruce Springsteen played the Hammersmith Odeon in 1975. It was his first European tour, and he got to the arena and he saw a load of posters that said London is ready for Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, and it pissed him off. So he ripped them all down and he said, they will be the judge of whether or not London is ready for me. Once I've performed my show, let's not already assume that they're going to like me. You know, I need to perform. And I could imagine Leighton Hewitt being a bit annoyed with that graphic going round, thinking, hang on, nothing's done yet. That's very much his attitude, isn't it? But those graphic people had the right one prepared because Australia did win. It was a pretty comprehensive victory, really, over Finland. And as you know, Finland have been incredible in this Davis Cup, but it was just a step too far, really, today.
Yeah, yeah, a bridge too far. Sad not to see deciding doubles, just as we were disappointed yesterday with Serbia and GB. But it was the right result, wasn't it? It was, I wouldn't quite guess if I was to say one-sided, but they were decisive victors in both ties. Aleksi Popperin against Otto Virtanen. I suppose you could say that there is an alternate universe in which Otto Virtanen won that opening set. Matt, is that the what if of this tie?
Big time. Because that was maybe the lowest quality set of the day, but certainly the most intriguing and the one where it did feel like the tie was really in the balance. I mean, first of all, just quite interesting that Aleksi Popperin was chosen ahead of Jordan Thompson, who played the other day. And I think it's interesting because he's really been on the periphery of the Australian Davis Cup squad. He has not been a mainstay whatsoever. He hadn't played a match for a couple of years. Had never won a live Davis Cup singles match, and suddenly he's thrown in the semi-finals in kind of the must win of the tie, really. You know, because had they not won that, they probably find themselves in a tricky doubles later on. So, you know, a really important moment. And he went with Aleksi Popperin. And to begin with, I thought maybe dropped a bit of a clanger because Popperin was as tight as a drum through most of that first set. I mean, even in the warm-up, I texted you two saying, he's dumped multiple backhands in the bottom of the net here, Popperin. You know, just total sign of tightness. And he said afterwards that he had never felt nerves like it. He said, I thought I was ready for the Davis Cup, but then I stepped out there and I heard all the Finnish chants and I heard the little section of Australian fans chanting. And he said he just was sort of overtaken by nerves. And you could really tell that in that first set where Otto Virtanen was the better player overall. And it really came down to the 12th game, Popperin serving to take it into a tie break. And Popperin could not buy a first serve on the ad side. And yet every single time, Virtanen missed the return at love 15, at 15-30, and then on his set point at 30-40, Virtanen missed a forehand return. And it was a slightly good, bold play from Popperin to mix up the serve. He'd been going to the backhand. He went to the forehand on the set point. It maybe caught Virtanen by surprise, but Virtanen will rue all those missed returns for sure. That was it. That was the small moment in the tie, I think, where it could have gone Finland's way. But he couldn't quite take advantage. And then once Popperin had that first set in the bag, I felt like he freed up and opened his shoulders and played a much better second set, whereas Virtanen was a little bit deflated, having not won that first set. But yeah, I completely agree. It was in the balance in that first set, and I think Otto Virtanen will have a few regrets.
You definitely can't tell how well someone's going to play from a warm-up ever, can you? Because all pros can and should look brilliant in a warm-up, but you can tell if someone's about to have a shocker or is going to kick off having a shocker, because pros should not be dumping any shots into the bottom of the net. We quite often remark to one another, don't we, oh my god, that's the shot that pros just don't hit. And yeah, that's a bit of a telltale sign, isn't it? And what a gift to your opponent. Imagine you're in a knockup with someone and they're dumping rally ball ground strokes into the bottom of the net. It must just be like a boost of adrenaline. It's funny, Popperin not being a Davis Cup guy up to this point. David, I don't know what you think about this, because he clearly hasn't been. He clearly hasn't. But, you know, in the way that we were talking about Alex de Minaur just being Leighton Hewitt's guy, just trusts him completely. Okay, he might not win every single match, but he trusts him to do it the Davis Cup way. And bear it all out there. Obviously, he just doesn't trust Alexei Popperin in the same way. And, you know, he's not a good, not as good a player as Alex de Minaur. The rankings show that. But he is somebody that's had his best results in Australia, which you would sort of think maybe those circumstances recreate Davis Cup circumstances more closely than, you know, an Australian playing in Madrid or something, you know, raucous crowds, okay, a lot more Australian support than you're going to get in Malacca, but kind of representing your country in a way that you're not when you're playing the US Open or whatever. I don't know. It surprised me to see that he just hadn't been a Davis Cup guy for Leighton Hewitt, and I'm sort of glad he's had the opportunity to prove that he can be.
Yeah, and I think that that is the factor. Until you've played, you can't prove that you're that guy because there's no data at all. There's nothing comparable, really. I think you've made a fair point there that the closest thing to it is probably playing at home when you're when there's a lot of hope around you, and he's kind of delivered in some of those situations. What was really impressive to me is he got over the tightness and he got over the fact that he was on the brink of losing that first set. And once he'd won that first set, he's the guy who hit the accelerator. And, you know, Vertanen actually hit more forehand winners, I think, in the course of the match than Popperin did. But he weathered that, he coped with that. And then when he needed to, he brought his own hammer down. And I think that he will have proved something to Hewitt out there today about himself, that there's something to him. And I think that Alexei Popperin, you say he's not as good a player as Alex de Minaur, absolutely correct, given the rankings and the pedigree and the experience and the results. But he should be. He should be as good as Alex de Minaur. Different. But my God, this guy's got a good game. He's 6'5" or whatever it is. He hits the ball so hard. He moves all right for a guy of his size. He's 40 in the world, right? It's one below his career high. He should be capable of better than that. And this could be the launch pad. Spending time with Hewitt, proving to Hewitt that with the green and gold on his back that he's better than he was without it. And I actually love listening to Alexei Popperin in post-match on-court flash interviews. I think he gives himself to you. He tells you how he's feeling. He's actually very quite eloquent in how much information he gives you and how much emotion he gives you. And I warm to him when I hear him talk, and I'd really like to see him become relevant a lot more often. In fact, I think he's on the outskirts of the wish list. He's not in it, but he's on the outskirts. He's sort of, you know, periphery.
Wow. What does he need to do to get on the wish list? Win the Davis Cup?
Well, yeah, because I think he either reached a final or won a title last year.
He won UMAG earlier this year. He beat Stan Wawrinka in the final when everyone in the crowd was going for Stan Wawrinka, you know, because they wanted to see it.
And he said Wawrinka's his hero, didn't he, on the court in the interview. And it was just so lovely. And he had such a way with words. And I really warmed to him.
And I thought therefore it was interesting today how he was really describing this win today against world number 171, Otto Vertanen, as the best win of his life. When you've got a direct comparison with earlier in the year where he's actually won something, you know, this was only the semi-final versus the final. He's beaten a sort of legend of the sport in Stan Wawrinka in that final. And yet he counts this as the bigger moment. And I wondered whether that was an in-the-moment thing sort of on the court, but he really doubled down on it in the press conference when he'd had a little bit of time to reflect. And he was just really talking up the Davis Cup. So I sort of asked him, well, has it been a disappointment and a frustration for you that you haven't been part of Leighton Hewitt's team before, really, quite so much? And he said, no, we all trust the captain. He's got a lot of players to pick from. And I needed to show him a little bit more. So then I asked Leighton Hewitt, well, what has Popperin shown you? You know, because it's a big leap to go from not being in the squad this time last week. You know, he wasn't in the squad. He replaced Kokkinakis at the last minute. It's a big leap to go from that to you're my guy for the semi-final. And I think Hewitt said it was a lot to do with matchups. You know, the fact that he'd beaten Otto Virtanen earlier this year gave Hewitt some confidence. But more generally, he talked about how he feels like he's seen a development from Popper in this year. You know, that career high came this year. He specifically mentioned that win over Taylor Fritz at the Australian Open as an example of sort of what Poppering can do under those sorts of conditions and circumstances. And he talked about his run in the summer, I think, in Cincinnati. He did pretty well as well. So clearly Hewitt has been impressed, and he had him with the team during the group stages in Manchester. He didn't use him, but he had him sort of on the sidelines, hitting with them all, practicing. And I think Hewitt basically runs these kind of training camps before a Davis Cup tie. And he needs to see these players putting in all the effort. And clearly Popperin has shown that and just earned his place and earned his call. And I'm really pleased for him that he delivered on it, actually, because, you know, that would have been a tough loss to suddenly get the call up and then lose. You know, does that set you back in terms of getting into future teams? But he was tight in that first set, but he overcame those nerves and then got the win. So I think he's very much in contention to play again in the final in 2 days' time.
In contention, do you expect him to play? Would you be surprised? Is he in the mix? Would you be surprised if he didn't play in the final? I think I would be.
He should play.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, I think I would go with him. I mean, he was very tight, and whether he's able to come out on court in the final and not be tight, I think will be a big question, because whoever Australia play in the final, he'll be playing a higher quality of opponent than Otto Virtanen, even as well as Otto Virtanen has done in Davis Cup this year. I was quite convinced by Hewitt talking about matchups. So I do think that ultimately will be the decision. I don't know what the head-to-heads are and everything, but equally, Italy and Serbia, you don't really know who their number two is going to be. Mm. So if you're going too much on matchups, you could get that wrong. So maybe you need to just have a gut feeling and trust the guy. And yeah, I certainly think Popperin has got a higher ceiling than Jordan Thompson, for example. Like I think Popperin can hit higher heights with his tennis. And if that's what you want, then he's your guy. But if you want a guy who's going to be a solid 7 out of 10 guaranteed,
no,
then it's Thompson.
But
yeah, I agree. I think you need to go out there and try and win it, especially because Dumanor is not going to be the favourite in his singles, which is a switch for Australia. They're used to being able to rely on Dumanor, but you know he may well. If there's any competition where Dumanor can get a really big win like that, it probably is this one. But you feel like they're going to need to win that number two singles.
Yeah, it's a fun dynamic, isn't it? Kind of going for someone like Alex de Minaur and the Australian team, as you say, whoever they play in the final, whether it's Italy or Djokovic, they're going to go from Alex de Minaur being the talisman, the breadwinner of that team, to potentially being a bit of an irrelevance. You know, that Australia are going to go into that final assuming they lose the number one singles and focusing on winning the number two and the doubles, right? Absolute Brucey bonus if Alex de Minaur wins that, but they have to plan on him not. And that's so different to every match up until this point.
Yeah, and they ran into that issue last year, you know, where de Minaur was... He's such a good number one to have because he always shows up. He never lets you down. He wins the matches he's expected to win. I was speaking to someone today and they were telling me that, you know, he had a chance to go to Turin as an alternate and, you know, and be one of the replacements. But he didn't do that because he was already doing his Davis Cup training camp. And that was a... You know, he turned down a lot of money there. You know, he would have got a big paycheck for showing up as an alternate.
It is money for nothing being an alternate at the ATP finals. It is a massive payday for a holiday in Turin.
I always always think of Richard Krajicek just sitting there in the player lounge, yeah, having had a week's worth of gorgeous Hanover player lounge food. They used to have an incredible chef. And I remember just when I think it was the final group match went on court, sitting in there, and he just said, right, they've played the first point, I'm off. Off to the airport.
Yep.
See you later.
That's the size of it. Mm.
And, you know, I think some players would have left their Davis Cup training camp to go to that, but not Alex de Minaur, you know. So he's such a good, reliable number one to have because of all of this. You know, he shows up always. But, you know, last year in the final, he ran into Felix Auger-Aliassime playing the best tennis of his life. And this year he's going to run into either Jannik Sinner or Novak Djokovic playing pretty much the best tennis of their lives. And so absolutely the whole dynamic of that team shifts and changes, and it becomes massively important that they win that number two singles. And last year they didn't in the final, and you know, they've got to make sure that they do win that, because then they've got a great doubles team, Australia, so they can always sort of pull it back in the doubles, but they've got to get to the doubles.
I do like that no matter who Australia end up playing in the final now, Italy or Serbia, if it goes down to the doubles, we will get a doubles team against a cobbled together couple of singles players makeshifting as a doubles team, which is my favourite dynamic on a doubles court.
Yeah.
Seeing if two great individuals can be superior to a great team. I love that. I love seeing that play out. So please let the final go to a deciding doubles. We should probably talk for a quick moment about Emil Ruusuvuori. And Alex de Minaur, because there was a moment there, wasn't there? I mean, after Otto Vertanen failed to pull it off against Alexei Popperin, you're thinking, oh no, it's all over Finland. Because obviously Emil Ruusuvuori is going to come out here in a full body cast and the jig is going to be up. But no, Emil Ruusuvuori bounces out onto court and immediately goes a break up. And I'm going, well, I'm literally texting the group going, hang on a minute.
Shoulder injury? What shoulder injury? It's all been a ruse.
What? This could be on. But it wasn't on. But I don't think it wasn't on because Emil Ruusuvuori was injured. I don't know. It certainly wasn't entirely because of that. Like it felt like a tennis match. It didn't feel like an injured person there to make up the numbers to prevent Patrick Kalkavalta from having to take to the court. It felt like a proper tennis match, at least.
Yes. I don't think he was injured, but he wasn't at 100%. And I think he sort of analysed it in the press conference as he didn't quite have the power in his arm that he normally does. And I think that was most evident on the serve. He just wasn't getting his serve speed up to what it can usually be. And I think he just thought, I need to tee off here and hope that they go in. And when they did, he was electric. You know, some of the shot making was absolutely brilliant, but it was very tough to sustain that for such a long period of time, especially against someone who defends as well as Alex de Minaur and gets as many balls back as he does. And I think on this court where it's staying really low, it's great for Alex de Minaur because he hits it so flat, and I think Ruusuvuori sort of sometimes struggled with that. So, you know, it was a competitive match for sure. There was a brilliant game in the second set where Ruusuvuori staved off so many break points, and I thought, okay, maybe this is going to put a bit of pressure on Alex de Minaur. You know, he thought he was going to be a double breakup. He's still only a breakup. How is he going to cope with that? And the answer was brilliantly. I mean, Alex de Minaur was just absolutely unfazed by everything today. He was really focused, really good. And just got the job done. But not Ruusuvuori at full strength, but still a very good, impressive performance from Alex de Minaur, as we've come to expect.
So Australia through to the final exactly where they were last year? Did Leighton Hewitt have sort of any reflect? I suppose it's quite a tough press conference without them knowing who they're going to play in that final, right? Tough for Leighton Hewitt to say too much, I suppose. Was there anything hugely insightful learnings from last year? I mean, it feels to me like such a different situation.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's quite a similar situation in that they need to win that number two singles because, I mean, they did last year as well because, okay, it was closer. You know, I think Dumanor, Auger-Aliassime, maybe you slightly favoured Auger-Aliassime, but you felt like Dumanor had a real shot in that one. He's 0-4 against Sinner on the tour, and he's 0-1 against Djokovic, that one coming earlier this year in the Australian Open when Djokovic absolutely crushed him. It felt like he was making a point out of Alex Dumanor, I remember.
Gosh, yeah, that match.
I'll never forget that.
So, look, those are tough matchups.
And Dumanor was in great form, wasn't he? The Aussies were really bigging it up.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. He wanted to, humiliate him. So if Leighton Hewitt really is picking on matchups, then it's out with Dumanor. I think Leighton Hewitt's a heart guy, isn't he? He's going to go with the guys he trusts. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't look at the matchups, of course, but ultimately, he's not going to let a matchup, a head-to-head, overrule his heart.
I think he trusts everyone in that team. He has put a lot of faith.
Kokkinakis?
Well, he's not in the team. He's been replaced by Popperin. So it's So it's Thompson or
so he didn't trust Kokkinakis. Okay, I mean Purcell can play.
Kokkinakis is injured, right?
Yeah, Kokkinakis is out with an ankle injury,
and he didn't have the best of times last year, as I recall, in the finals, and I actually thought, I think I'd been campaigning for Jordan Thompson to get the nod in the final against Shapovalov, I think, on that occasion. I just think that Popperin looks dangerous, and I would trust him based on today. I know he was really nervous, but he overcame that. And he looks like a big-time player to me. He seems to struggle to knit it all together to do as well as he can. Didn't he lose to Ben Shelton at the Australian Open in the end? I think when Shelton was having his run, I can't exactly remember, but I just think Popperin should be doing more. And this is such a great opportunity for him. And whilst I like Jordan Thompson, you're right about the 7 out of 10 thing. It's not enough. You want to have that thing on your racket. Somebody needs to have it on their racket. And Dumanor is not going to have it on his racket against those top two option players for Italy or Serbia. And, you know, that would be my view.
Three Beers Law is an Alexei Popperin guy. Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah, I completely agree. And on the nerves thing, I mean, fangs aren't about not feeling the fear, are they? Fangs are about feeling the fear and doing it anyway. So, yeah, you can kind of see that both ways, can't you? The fact that he fought through that, okay, he's going to have to fight through it against tougher opposition in the final. But I think that's overall a tick in the plus Alexei Popperin column. I've drank David's Alexei Popperin Kool-Aid, haven't I? Delicious.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So what about you did some previewing of Italy against Serbia and Djokovic against Sinner and TBC against TBC on yesterday's pod. Do we have any further thoughts?
Well, I have a little bit of reporting coming out of Italy.
Ooh.
In that Volandri has said in Italian, and look, Maybe he said this to throw people off, but it sounds like Sonego is not in line to play singles.
Boo.
It sounds like he's not quite fully healthy, and they don't think he can play singles and then the doubles. And they want Sinner and Sonego in the doubles if they can get it there. So it sounds like, and again, always got to take some of this with a pinch of salt. When you know Sonego's named in the nominations at 11 o'clock tomorrow, you can just ignore all this section of the podcast. But anyway, it sounds like a shootout between Arnaldi and Musetti for that number two Italian singles, which feels so pivotal.
See, that is quite crucial intel, I think, because prior to that intel, I was going to make a case for Sonego, but if he's not fully fit to play two, I agree you need to keep that doubles team together because it very well could be critical.
Who'd you go for? At those two?
I don't think...
I'm going on now.
I don't think Musetti is a Davis Cup guy. Like, I don't trust him. I know the only way he can prove it is by doing it, and he has to be given a chance to do it, but I don't trust him enough to give him a chance. I think Musetti is a beautiful tennis player, but a fang-free zone. That is how I feel about Lorenzo Musetti right now. I hope he shows fang, develops, grows, whatever, fang over the course of his career. No one would love to see it more than me. I'm yet to see it, and I wouldn't be putting a fang-free player into that situation. Personally, the scar tissue of yesterday worries me a bit about Arnaldi. But then that's when a captain earns their money, isn't it? That's when, you know, I don't really know much about what Filippo Volandri's like as a hype man. Is he a David Law voice note guy? But he's got to somehow nullify that scar tissue from yesterday. Usually if you lose from match point up, you have more than 2 days to try and recover from it before you play your next match. That is tough, I think. But
he's delighted with his performance.
which, as you correctly assessed on last night's podcast, I'm not impressed with, and also suggests a fang-free zone.
Probably the best way to deal with the trauma, though.
Yeah. Basically, long-winded way of saying I'd rather Sonego was up for it or Berrettini was fit. But between those two, I'd probably just about edge Arnaldi.
Yeah.
Matt?
I think I would be going Arnaldi as well. He did a lot right against Bortic van der Zandschulp. He really did. You know, there were very good elements of his performance for sure. And I agree with you about Mazzetti. And he has had a bit of a chance in this competition. You know, okay, not this week, but he has played Davis Cup before. He's got a losing record in singles. He's lost his last three in this competition in singles. He's only won one of his last seven matches, period. And that was against Karen Khachanov, who just won the title in Zhuhai, and they then played in Beijing. So, you know, his one win out of his last seven matches is against a tired Karen Khachanov. This is quite a fast surface, I think, and generally I don't think of Mazzetti as thriving on those. The only case I can make for Mazzetti is he has a 2-0 head-to-head against Kecmanovic, which doesn't feel huge, but doesn't feel like nothing. Like, I do think that Kecmanovic enjoyed playing Draper because of the rhythm that Draper gave him. You know, he was able to just tee off and hit big. And Mazzetti won't give you that because he's got the slice backhand, and I think he can disrupt a little bit. However, what I absolutely love about the sort of Davis Cup and what the nominations might be and whether there's some bluffing or double bluffing going on, It would be quite amusing if Italy put Mazzetti out thinking, okay, he's got the head-to-head against Kecmanovic, and then Serbia threw a curveball and threw in Gerra because Gerra's got a great record against Mazzetti. He's 6-2 against Mazzetti. And, you know, that's a lot of data, and including some matches on clay, which is Mazzetti's best surface. So there's quite a lot that could go on there in terms of
what's Arnaldi against Gerra.
I don't think Arnaldi's played either of them, I believe. So yeah, maybe that's the reason why you go Arnaldi. You know, to sort of just so that Serbia don't know, because it sounded like Serbia picked Kecmanovic against Draper because he'd already played him and was familiar with him. So maybe Arnaldi as a bit of a sort of wild card for the Serbians would make sense for Italy to go with that.
Kecmanovic's head-to-heads, though, I do feel like he's one of those players where they're almost irrelevant, because obviously sometimes a different guy shows up. Like, look at some of the losses he's had this year, had recently. Wasn't he on a... Didn't he say he'd lost his previous four matches before his win yesterday against Draper? He certainly came in on a losing streak. Like, I didn't watch those matches he was losing at tour level before the Davis Cup finals, but he definitely wasn't playing like he did yesterday when he looked like peak Andre Agassi. Like, I do think he's one of those Aslan Karatsev-type players that pops up every now and then, looks like the best ball striker of all time, and then disappears for 4 months. And I don't understand players like that, but I do know that they exist. And they're very difficult to know what to do with in predictions and when to play them in Davis Cup ties. But having said all of that, I don't think you can drop a guy that played like he did yesterday against Draper, personally, head-to-heads or not. And I certainly don't think you can make that decision based on head-to-heads when you really don't know who the opposition are going to be playing.
Yeah. I think if you're Viktor Troitsky, and... By the way, I still just find it quite funny that Viktor Troitsky's the Serbia captain. I don't know why, but I do.
Is he really?
I mean,
who do we think is making the decisions in that team? That's a
very fair point, I would say. And interestingly, kind of on that, Djokovic isn't staying with the team here. His brother has a house, I believe, in Marbella, and I believe Novak Djokovic is staying there, and he's got his whole family here. And he said that was important in terms of helping him to feel fresh at this time of the year, you know, to have his parents, his kids. And I absolutely am sure that is the case. It's just interesting, isn't it? I don't think many teams could get away with their star player not being with them. But you know, the rules are just a bit different, I think, surrounding Novak Djokovic and the Serbia team. So, yes, I think that probably is a sort of element here that, he, you know, Viktor Troicki is the captain, but Novak Djokovic is in charge. And, you know, I just think if you're them, you run Kecmanovic back, don't you? Because he played so well the other night. So I am expecting Kecmanovic to line up for Serbia. And I think I'm expecting Arnaldi for Italy.
So we all want Arnaldi? Would we, or if we are Felipe Vilandri, would have thought, we're all playing Kecmanovic and Arnaldi?
Yeah. But
yeah, that's what I'd do if I were the two.
Personally,
captains,
I would like to see Musetti, because I think it would be great pod content material. Win or lose.
Could this be the moment that he wins Catherine over?
Does anyone think Sinner's beating Djokovic? Not me. I loved him yesterday. I agree with everything you said on the pod, and I loved how brilliantly you summed it up. And I do like it when Jannik Sinner shows us something a bit different, because just every now and then I do just sort of feel a bit cold about Jannik Sinner. Like, I really appreciate what I'm seeing. I can see that it's brilliant, but it just can leave me a bit cold. And then he has a day like he did yesterday, and I really felt very warm about him yesterday. It was electrifying, and I loved seeing him come alive in that atmosphere and puff his chest out. It was good fun. So I am into Davis Cup Jannik Sinner. I just think it's Novak Djokovic, and it's Novak Djokovic that's just decided he's winning the Davis Cup this year.
Yeah, and I think that is where I'm just having a hesitation, because I think he could get a little bit stressed about that, because it means so much to him. It's not that he didn't want to win the ATP finals, of course he did, but look, after the round robin stages for him pretty much finished and it wasn't in his hands, he had a day or two off. Good on him. I mean, I think that's a healthy way to go about your life. He wasn't that bothered, you know. I mean, once he got into the semi-finals, it was like playing with the house's money then, because he got through the, right, okay, now I'm bothered. Now I want to go and teach these two guys a lesson, right? But he's freed up and he just goes and destroys them. And, you know, yes, I suppose he might have lost a little bit of locker room power if he hadn't won those matches. But the fact that he freed up made him play awesome, even more awesome than usual. And then there's another version of him, the one where he goes and rubs Alex de Minaur and Australia's face in it last year. Those are different causes to this one. This one is something that really matters to him, matters deep down in his soul. He desperately wants to win this for his country. There's emotion at stake here. Now, that may well make him play even better, but I think it also could make him stressed. And I think Sinner's playing well enough to bring that into question, at least. Look, if Djokovic plays his best, he will still win. But I do wonder whether there might be a bit of stress on the horizon.
Do you think Sinner's got more chance if Italy are 1-0 up or 1-0 down?
Great question.
I would say Sinner has more chance with Italy 1-0 up.
Because then he could be loose and
be
free.
Very free.
Yeah.
When he's loose and free, I think he's bloody dangerous. Now, Djokovic is an extraordinary competitor, and he finds ways to win even when somebody is loose. That's one of his superpowers, is winning even though the other guy is lethal and loose. And Djokovic still wins. It's an incredible ability.
Yeah, well, but Set two of the second match they played at the ATP Finals on Sunday, Djokovic tightened up big time in that second set, and Sinner didn't punish him for it, because by that point I think his head was scrambled by how different the match was to what he had in the plan he had in his head, and to the match they'd played in the group stages. I think everything had kind of gone out the window for him, and by the time the door opened a crack, he wasn't able to capitalise at all. But there was a period of play midway through that second set where Djokovic was there for the taking. He tightened up so badly, but because Sinner wasn't kind of loose enough by that stage to take advantage. We didn't kind of get to see it play out, but I see what you mean. If Sinner's loose and Djokovic tightens up, I think it'll be interesting. I think there'll be moments where we see that dynamic. I just think Djokovic will fight through it in the end. But just give me the doubles.
Yeah.
Give me the doubles.
Well, that's it. I mean, and then if we get doubles, chances are we see Sinner Djokovic again, just on the doubles court, which would be fun. I mean,
I'm actually more into that. I've seen a lot of Djokovic Sinner in singles. It's been great. But give me Sinner versus Djokovic in doubles.
Imagine an immediate rematch. Imagine, right, if Sinner's playing second and Sinner finds a way to beat Djokovic and then they have the rematch in doubles.
Oh.
Djokovic isn't going to lose two matches in a row, though, is he? he's never going to lose Djokovic to Sinner twice in a week. He's not,
twice in a week.
Not lose to him twice in an afternoon.
In 4 hours.
It's... I'm very excited for it. I mean, as you said, third meeting in 11 days. Like, yes, okay, we have seen it a lot recently, but this is kind of it's a special period in the rivalry right now, and they are the two in-form players, and this is what you want from the Davis Cup, for the best players to be meeting. You know, and look, I love the Davis Cup when it gives you a romantic story like Finland. You know, how can you not be romantic about it? But equally, part of the reason why the format changed is because very often you wouldn't get the top players coming up against each other. You know, Rafael Nadal is on this incredible Davis Cup winning streak of, I don't know, 26 matches or whatever. Novak Djokovic is also on a Davis Cup winning streak of 21 matches. Part of the reason they're both able to have these incredible winning streaks is because they never play each other in the Davis Cup. They haven't played each other in this competition for so many years, whereas they're playing each other all the time on the tour. And I just think it's special that we've got, you know, a semi-final. Okay, might be even better if it was the final, but it's great that it's the semi-final. Two best players in the world right now are going to go up against each other. And that's what you want. And it's going to be a different atmosphere to what it was on the tour. And I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be more like their first match in Turin in terms of how close it is than their second one. I don't know. I can't see Djokovic just sort of swatting him aside like he did in that final. I think it's going to be close.
Yeah, I agree. It is. Oh, it's delicious. Can't wait. And it's an earlier start tomorrow, Matt. Is that right?
It is. It's a 12 p.m. start. I think that's to give the winner a bit of recovery time, because obviously, you know,
right,
Australia have got an advantage there in terms of that.
Great. Okay, well, take advantage of an early night. David, sorry, three biz law, I should say. Early night for you. Or maybe the night is still young. Maybe a Birmingham club awaits.
We're going at least four. That's what I can promise you. And I will save my big format rant for you for one of the remaining two podcasts.
Okay.
Is this a new
rant? Pretty pumped for that.
Yeah. I don't know. I might have said it a year ago at the end, but I'm going to say it again because I feel very passionate about it.
Love it.
Great. Okay. Fantastic tease. Tune in to our two remaining Davis Cup podcasts tomorrow, folks. Another little tease for you. I will be in Malaga with Matt, making an on-site cameo.
Excited.
Returning to the Whitaker heartland. I don't know. I only found out this week that my great-grandparents lived in Fuengirola. But exciting stuff. There we go. So, yes, brief cameo from me in Malaga. So we'll be back tomorrow. David's rant promised at some point over the weekend. We have our mascots. I think all of our predictions are still in play. No, Matt lost his today. Matt and Maisie had...
No.
No, Matt and no, Matt and Darwin had Finland.
Yeah.
And it was fun while it lasted.
It was.
David and Maisie...
Finland fun.
David and Maisie have got Serbia and I've got Italy.
Serbia.
With Zenia. So it's all on the line tomorrow, folks. Billie Jean.
Loggerheads. I had
a little FaceTime with Billie Jean earlier. It was lovely stuff. I'll pop a picture of that on our Instagram if you fancy it. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And the three of us are here, so we have shout-outs. Over to you, Matt.
We have Michael in New York. Just Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Like Michael Chang.
Michael Russell.
Michael Moe.
Michael Stick. I've come up with two Grand Slam champions.
We did Russell and Moe. The biggies.
Mine were the 90s.
What do we know about Michael?
We know that he's been listening to the podcast since before the pandemic, and it's been a weekly routine that brings so much joy, he says.
Oh, love that, Michael.
Thanks,
thank you.
Michael.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We've also got...
I've just freestyled his name. He probably hates Mike.
Let's see what you do with this one. Lisa Wiersma in Chicago.
Hello, Lisa.
Right, Lisa.
Right, Lisa Raymond.
And this is an excellent story. Lisa says, I mostly listen to the pod walking my blue tick coonhound who has a tennis name. It's Cliffy because I heard Pam Shriver refer to Cliff Drysdale by that name for years on ESPN coverage and I loved it.
Oh, should have called the dog Pam. Boy dog.
Very good point. Still call it Pam.
Call your next dog Pam.
Pammy.
Cliffy is a good dog name, though, isn't it?
Sensational. Well done, Pam.
Love that. Well done, Pam. Well done, Lisa. Well done, everyone. Thank you very much.
And finally, for some reason, I've only got three written down today, despite promising four, but I'm afraid this is your lot. We have Geraint in Southwark in London.
Oh, not far from me. I was very close to Southwark earlier, making my second trip in a month to the London Aquarium. Can't stay away.
I'm struggling for tennis names.
Well, we've got Geraint Thomas, the cyclist, which is sport, at least. It's better than either of you two are doing.
Correct.
Well, I would have also have come up with Thomas, but you got
name,
in there
it?
First.
Welsh name. Southwark. Tom Daly lives in Southwark. Or he used to live in Southwark. I saw him once in a Tesco Express.
Geraint Jones. That's a cricketer.
Yes. No. Rugby player.
No, Geraint Jones played...
There's a Geraint rugby player that I'm
probably
trying to think of as well. Probably half the Welsh rugby team are called Geraint, aren't they?
Yeah. Geraint Jones was the wicketkeeper at the 2005 Ashes, I believe.
Very good. I'm going to say confidently there are no tennis Geraints. This isn't us dropping the ball. This is just tennis letting us down. And letting you down, Geraint, quite frankly. It's not too late to turn pro. But thank you very much for your support. Thank you to all of our shout-out friends, our intro friends, all our friends of the Tennis Podcast that make this possible. If you'd like to get yourself a shout-out or an intro, the link to do that is in our show notes. And remember that in just a couple of weeks' time, we will be reopening various categories for 2024. Pet mascots, executive producers, guest editors, all the fun stuff. So more details to follow. But if you've got two pets, pick your pet now to be a mascot for 2024. Right. Or if you don't have a pet, but you'd like to have a pet mascot, get a pet. This is the push you've been looking for. The time is now.
You also get a pet out of it.
Exactly. A pet and a mascotdom. Double tick. Right. Let's get this show off the road. Three Beers Law, thank you for your company tonight. Matt, thank you for bringing some credibility to the show. Thank you for listening. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.